back on the Cannabis Corner. My name is Lucas Barfield. I am a local Tacoma cannabis educator, activist, and researcher, and I am joined by my co-host, who is a cannabis grower and educator and podcast down in Oregon, Uncle Dig. How you doing today, Uncle Dig?
I am doing great today, Lucas. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good, man. We are in the fall officially now. It's past the 21st of August, and the rain is coming in, and all those flowers are looking good on those cannabis plants, and it's smelling really good right now. What's going on with your garden right now, Dig?
Yeah. It's going really, really, really good. We just got a little bit of rain. It's definitely feeling like the fall. I had some plants go a little early. Some of them are already in jars. I'm in the process of trimming my early finishing indicas, two star killer plants, and I'm done trimming my black domina. And then I still have my hybrids and sativas outside. Two CBD Dutch treats are finishing up as we speak, as well as an alien OG that's going to be behind everybody else, and a bag seed called a strawberry dream that I'm growing that I'm really happy with so far.
Yeah, we look forward to hearing more about that. That's actually our segment this week, is a garden report from Dig to tell us all about what's going on in his garden. And we got a lot of news to get to. But first, before we get into our news, I want to bring the audience up to date on some things we have been talking about in the Washington State cannabis industry. And that is this idea of Delta 8 and synthetic Delta 9 THC, and also things like CBG, CBN, and CBD, and how these things are regulated in the state of Washington. So right now, Dig, as you know, Delta 8 is kind of out there on a gray market, just sort of floating around. I have reports from down south that you can just basically buy it anywhere. I've been told that here in Washington that you can buy it at vape shops and anywhere. Is that how it is down there in Oregon?
I'm not 100% sure. I think some like head shops, like places where you could buy like bongs and stuff, they tend to have it. But I don't really purchase it or really look for it when I'm in those places. I'm more there for glass or like rolling papers or stuff. And so I kind of have tunnel vision a little bit. So like, I don't always notice the other products that are there. I get the impression that a lot of people have been getting it online, and that some people are buying it in stores, but like I'm not interested in Delta 8 for personal use, so I don't know how common it is in the retail environment down here.
Yeah, and I'm sort of in a similar situation in Washington, but yeah, from the one sheet that I read from the Liquor and Cannabis Board, it is being sold around Washington in vape stores, and like you were saying, in bong and pipe stores, and it is official. I went into a meeting yesterday, and the Liquor and Cannabis Board, and they're actually trying to get this kind of nailed down and get it written correctly. So it's still in like draft format, but the LCB is officially going to take Delta 8 THC. Now remember, folks, this is not THC that grows on a, that comes from a cannabis plant. Although I have recently heard they did know about it for a long time. Is such a teeny tiny amount of it on a cannabis plant that it's almost not natural, Dig. But there is a little tiny amount of it. But what they are doing is they're taking CBD and converting it into this Delta 8 and making very large amounts of it. And this is where this is all coming from in the vape shop stores. But now, Dig, it is official. According to the Liquor and Cannabis Board, they want to shut all that down out there on the gray market and officially bring this made-up Delta 8 THC synthetic man-made, I'm saying, there is a small amount out there in nature. They are wanting to bring that into the 502 system as an official product in the stores, Dig.
Well, that's gross. And they, that's really unfortunate. You know, I talk a lot of mess about Washington's cannabis system, but y'all do grow some unique flavored cannabis. Yes, up in Washington. It's grown in a different environment than what it is here, so it tastes a little different. It hits my head a little different. So whenever I go up there, I do try to buy cannabis in one of your regulated stores, and now I'm not going to be able to do that because I'm not going to know whether or not it's got spice in it.
Yeah, and it's a little different than spice, but it is sort of the same concept. But like my friend down in Panama City was saying, they're actually taking hemp. And I think you mentioned this before. and they're spraying it with the Delta 8. So the Liquor and Cannabis Board, they're going to start allowing processors to be able to do this. So you'll be able to bring in like a ton of hemp. And I have actually heard recently that there is like floor processing floors around Washington with big massive piles of CBD hemp there that they're processing in the Delta 8 or whatever. And it is happening right now. And it is just going to be a massive disruption to the market. And I really don't think it's a very good thing, diluting the market down with something like that.
I agree with you, but let me push back a little bit on that. Delta 8 isn't spice. Delta 8 is a very, very small quantity cannabinoid in most natural cannabis plants. They're driving something that's not, that doesn't exist in these levels in nature. Much like a lot of the so-called synthetic cannabinoids found in early spice could be found in real cannabis plants, but in no, not really high levels, not enough to be an active ingredient. So they're deriving something that's not meant or not designed in nature to be an active ingredient, to become an active ingredient. And they're spraying it on plant material that it didn't originate on. So I think it's pretty similar to spice.
Yes, because spice is sprayed onto plant material, like you said. So it is very similar. I just didn't want to characterize it as being similar in a, it is a cannabinoid, but I don't know how similar it is in like a chemical standpoint. You know what I mean? Like,
well, yeah,
as far as the chemical structure.
But then spice isn't really a useful, you know, thing either, because they process like hundreds and hundreds of synthetic cannabinoids into spice over the years. So depending on like what time of manufacture you're looking at consuming spice from, you know, 2005 to now, it's going to depend on what you're actually getting, and it's going to be completely different. It's just a generic term for synthetic cannabinoids, and I think we should call Delta 8 spice regardless of what anyone else wants to say. It needs to have a bad reputation because it's a disingenuous thing meant to circumvent both the illegal market and the illicit market. It's bad for everyone involved in the production, consumption, and transportation of cannabis.
Yeah, and this, we could keep going on about this because there is a big, long bullet point list of why this can be an issue. And we're actually going to have on somebody soon to talk about all this going on in the 502 market, because there's other news like the traceability system is going away. The new word I'm hearing now, Dig, is they're not worried about diversion. They're actually worried about what I was just talking about with all the hemp coming in. They're worried about inversion. So there's a whole lot of crazy stuff going on in the Washington State cannabis market. We're going to get somebody in that knows a little more about that, some of the details soon. But speaking of spice, let's get into our first story here on our news part of our show. And this one involves a story over at ganjapreneurs.com, and it's talking about that people, this is the very first study of its kind, that people have stronger withdrawals and they come on quicker from using things like spice and K2 as opposed to regular cannabis. Yeah, so this was published in the Journal of Psychopharmacology, and it looked at 284 individuals that had said they had used spice before, and it was real fascinating the conclusion they came out of the study with, Dig, which was basically, don't let people substitute spice and K2 for cannabis. And what does that mean?
Well, I mean, have you ever consumed a spice or K2 or synthetic cannabis?
I have not.
I would advise people, and this article brings it up, Sam Kraft, the study main author, spice is significantly a more dangerous substance than those seeking to quit. It's more intense. I had occasion to use spice once when I was in the military, and I used a fair amount of it in one sitting. And one thing I will say about some of these synthetic cannabinoids versus cannabis is, rather than being a mild psychedelic, some of these synthetic cannabinoids can almost be like a disassociative.
Yeah.
So you're having a completely different experience. It can make you very ill. They're dangerous drugs. You get heart palpitations while you're on it. It's not like cannabis. And I would say that I felt an amount of a hangover, like something similar to a hangover after using it, which I don't really get with cannabis. I might feel a little groggy the next morning if I use a lot of like a really potent indica the night before, but I don't feel like bad or have head pressure. My chest feels weird like it did the one time I consumed spice. I would advise those looking to substitute cannabis for us with a synthetic cannabinoid to not do it and just wait until they can consume the real thing.
Yeah, definitely. And that's kind of what the article was getting at is spice and everything is really dangerous. Don't substitute it for cannabis. But one of the things I take away I got was something that we talk about all the time is, and this kind of gets back to the Delta 8 thing, is we really need to open up the market and the world to cannabis so people aren't wanting to substitute these more harmful substances and then things like Delta 8, more unknown substances for cannabis. So I took away from the article, this is really a talking point for more legalization so we have less spice and less K2, because there were some famous things like the bath salts and all that down in Florida. That's all synthetic cannabinoids too. So it's all really dangerous and it can be very problematic.
Well, and that's not even to begin to mention some of the other more potent psychedelics like kids and younger children may experiment with instead of cannabis. I'm not advocating that teenagers and, you know, middle school age kids use cannabis, but that has never stopped them in the past. But if they're not able to find cannabis, a lot of times what they find is, for instance, something that I was really attracted to when I was a young man and still kind of enjoy, but don't actually enjoy personally, is salvia. And I think a lot more people would have experimented less with salvia if they'd had access to cannabis.
Yeah, so definitely. And that kind of what we're saying is we need more access to regular cannabis, not less. So all these efforts from like the Liquor Control Board and people around the country to continually crack down on cannabis and bring in the cannabinoids, the real cannabinoids, further regulate and further restrict them, it's actually harmful to society rather than helping them, because study after study shows that these substitutes that people use are more harmful than cannabis. And as this study just showed, they have, and it seems like from what you experienced too, they have stronger hangover effects, which is a symptom of withdrawal. So let's continue to spread cannabis legalization so that we can have less access to bad drugs like this. And, you know, it helps with the opiate crisis too, Dig, something we've not been talking about lately.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of early stage research right now, and there's already some organizations and some individuals that are using cannabis in addition to like talk therapy and some other methods to kind of cease opiate use or mitigate opiate use disorders.
So getting on to our next topic, which is out of California, and that is that the California Attorney General, and this is something we're seeing more and more around the country, but nothing as big as this. The California Attorney General has actually approved a ballot initiative for legalizing psychedelic mushrooms. So they are going to have a ballot initiative in 2022 in California, if they get enough signatures, to legalize, not legalize, so they're not going to be selling it, although that's the ultimate goal, to decriminalize psilocybin, psilocin, and other psychedelics.
Yeah, I think what they're actually trying to, I haven't seen the language of the ballot initiative yet, but it would seem that they're trying to legalize psilocybin and, like you said, psilocin and some other entheogens found within psilocybin mushrooms. In other words, they're not legalizing possession and sale of psilocybin mushrooms per se, but they're entheogens or the compounds that they produce. So I think that there's going to be it's going to be more pharmacological, more clinical than maybe a shaman with a couple of stems and a cap.
Yeah, and that's what they were saying too, because there is a bill in the legislature that's sponsored. So that now that they have an initiative and a bill going together, you can almost pretty much guarantee that this is going to make it through at some point. And the bill in the legislature actually legalizes psilocybin, psilocin, mescaline, which comes from peyote, and MDMA. They're not legalizing peyote and ayahuasca because those plants are actually in a sort of an endangered status, especially peyote. So they're not wanting to legalize peyote because they just don't want everybody going out running through the desert trying to get peyote buttons. However, they are legalizing mescaline, which I have had the opportunity and the privilege to take, and it is a very nice entheogen, and it doesn't taste all crazy like peyote or anything like the cactuses or anything, and it's not going to endanger the plant. It's actually laboratory synthesized. So good news out of California, and I just saw an article today that a senator in Florida is proposing a bill for the for Florida to do research on psychedelics down in Florida.
Cool. I think more research is always good on psychedelics. I think that there are more and more things that they do that we don't fully understand. I think that one of the hardest things about studying psychedelics and cannabis to a lesser extent is that the effects can vary wildly per individual. And I think that especially with some of these naturally derived psychedelics, like for instance, the DMT from the Bufo frog, and like you mentioned, mescaline versus the peyote button, we need to come up with chemical synthesis to make these compounds to save the species that are actually helped us discover these compounds, because the peyote buttons in the Southwest are becoming endangered due to over-harvesting, and the same thing with the DMT frogs down south as well. We need to be good custodians of our plant medicines and our animal medicines. We don't want to abuse these creatures that have given so much to us.
Yeah, definitely. So we definitely need to be looking at sustainability and be able to preserve these for future generations. And a lot of the indigenous people use the real peyote buttons and may use real plants and animals that bring on psychedelic trips. And so we want to make sure that they're preserved for them and their religious ceremony. So very good point there, Dig. And it's spreading all over the country, except I don't know whether they're just avoiding it or they don't want to talk about it, Dig, but I have not heard one lawmaker or regulator in the state of Washington even mention the word psilocybin. They're just hoping that if they don't talk about it, it'll go away. So a lot of interesting stuff going on around the country. I would encourage the audience to look up that a little more if they're interested in those kind of things. It is a real deal sort of movement going on to legalize some of these entheogens in the United States.
Yeah, and the work is not done until we hit 50 states. I'm not going to be happy with 15 states where, you know, psilocybin is legal or cannabis is legal. We need to make sure that people aren't harassed or abused by the powers of the state for consuming mostly or completely safe plant medicine.
Absolutely. And speaking of powers of the state, well, not the state, but pretty darn close to it these days, Amazon is not going to be doing drug tests anymore. Why is that, Dig?
Well, that's actually a complicated question. It's actually not completely out of the goodness of their own heart. Amazon relies on a concept known as employing surplus workers. They have extremely high turnover due to some of their labor practices. Yep. For example, from July to October 2020, of the over 350,000 workers Amazon hired, many just stayed with the companies just days or weeks. Now, this isn't an indictment of Amazon's workforce. This is an indictment of Amazon's labor practices. But now Amazon says because it can't find enough people to hire, it's willing to waive the drug testing requirements for its hiring processes. So it's not going to test for cannabis anymore. Also, what people don't realize, that's going to save Amazon money. These drug tests cost money.
Oh, yeah.
Also, what this does is it allows Amazon to access a new labor pool to abuse and use up.
Yeah, and it also pushes other companies to maybe not drug test too, because like you said, they're not doing it for the goodness of their heart, and not that they like cannabis. It's just that they see the writing on the wall, and they're also out there lobbying for cannabis legalization, which I think we've mentioned on this show before. Amazon is trying to get set up to do cannabis sales, and I mean, somebody's got to do it, and I'm really glad they're out there pushing it, because we really do need interstate commerce as far as cannabis goes. But back to the drug test, I just also saw that places like Kansas City is not going to drug test their employees. So this is another movement, sort of like the psilocybin movement, that is spreading across the country where more and more employers are not drug testing. I think I saw the news industry is stopping drug testing because they just can't find
anybody. Been testing. They haven't been testing for a while. Come now.
Hey, it's just what I read. but they got to do something, because 18 states adult use, they got all the medical cannabis. I mean, Alabama has medical cannabis, for goodness sake. So, I mean, everybody around there is using some type of cannabis or cannabinoid product. You know, look at Delta 8. That's going to pop a drug test, and that stuff's selling like crazy. So, yep. They're going to have to stop with these silly drug tests.
Ladies and gentlemen, take the radio station approach. There's an old story about Clear Channel coming into a radio station in Houston and instituting mandatory drug testing. And afterwards, when only two of the 100 radio station employees pissed clean, they decided that they wouldn't do that again. And that is the way that we force our corporate overlords and our civic ones to listen to us. Make yourself unavailable until they give in to your demands. And we've been doing that collectively the past year more than ever. And I am proud of us. Good job, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And we need to make ours. It is a very good point. It is hard to do because we have rents and bills and all these things. But the pandemic has given everybody the opportunity to be like, nope, not going to do that for you. And there is, you know, people scoff at the labor shortage thing, but there is a fairly big labor shortage going on, even in the cannabis industry. And Amazon is just saying, hey, we got to do something. So I'm not going to say good on Amazon, but I'm going to say good on, like you just said, the people who are demanding that this practice stop, because it's oppressive, it's silly, and it's really hurting employment. I can't tell you how many times when I was growing up, people that I knew that would try to get jobs here and there and get failed a drug test, and it really hurt them and their family. So I'm glad that this policy is ending nationwide.
Just think of all the other ways we could flex our people power. Look, the McDonald's down the street's offering $15 an hour. Imagine what we could do with the war machine if we stopped enabling it.
Yeah, good point. Good point. We could do a lot like that if we would the working class would unite and have some more solidarity between everybody. I was just seeing, we can kind of get off topic here, but we were just seeing there was a carpenter strike here in the Seattle area, but it was kind of striking to me. And I was just reading a book set in the early 20th century about solidarity and a lot of unions coming together and the IWW and all these kind of things. And just having one union instead of a whole bunch of them. But I just kind of struck me how the carpenter strike is going on, but nobody's saying, hey, come join the carpenter strike. Everybody's kind of in their own little pocket. But we digress, Dig, and we could get off on that subject. But we need us a cannabis industry union, too.
Yeah, yeah. I think that'll happen in the next 20 years once it becomes a more at least in certain regions becomes a larger sale of the official workforce, and kind of people are less kind of forced by society to be kind of discreet when they're talking about their cannabis employment, just because there's still some social stigma out there. And sometimes it's better not to mention exactly what you farm at a certain party. But that's not the point. The point is that as these people are able to organize, we're going to understand what a fair wage in the cannabis market is. We're going to understand what we should be paying bud tenders. And once we understand that, we can get together, show some solidarity, and figure out what our demands are for wages across the board.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to get to our last story of our news update segment, and that is going back to California. And this is actually a trend going on in California. I just wrote an article a couple weeks ago about a San Diego retail store dispensary suing. They were actually suing an ex-sheriff and a bunch of illegal cannabis dispensaries because the underground cannabis market is just going crazy down in California. And so now there's a new tactic coming up. Instead of law enforcement, they're doing lawsuits. So recently, a retail chain in California, they operate six dispensaries, they decided to sue the Department of Cannabis Control there in California because, according to them, there are millions and millions and millions of dollars of cannabis that are being sold or bought in legal channels. I know it's hard to figure this out. They're actually being bought in legal cannabis markets there in California,
yeah,
and then sold on the illegal underground market. So
okay,
that is the crazy thing going on in California.
So a cannabis operator is suing the state because people, I'm assuming from out of state, come in and buy legal stuff and then leave and sell it elsewhere on the illicit market, and that the state is accidentally propping up cheaper illicit market cannabis that undercuts the legal industry. So basically, this cannabis business is suing the state because other cannabis, so the state's not able to clamp down on illicit cultivation, which they've never been able to do, no matter how hard they try. And so now this dirtbag's going to try to get money out of the state from a problem the state already can't solve. So they're shooting the state in the foot for not running fast enough. That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Well, actually, in this case, they're saying that the state can solve it because according to the lawsuit, these distributors coming in, there's like a loophole in the tracking system, they say. Mm-hmm. So they can send in like a front man. So what we could do, Dig, is you and I could go into business. Okay. I could send you down to California. You could go in as a front man, get a fake distributor license down there, and then start buying cannabis on the legal market there and then sending it to me over here. But it's all coming out of the legal market. So it's not like they're doing the illegal grows, shipping it out of state. They're doing legal grows and then shipping it out of the state. And what they're saying is that there's a loophole in the traceability system that the state knows about it. They're just not fixing it.
Okay.
And that's what the lawsuit is trying to get to. But I don't think I'm with you, though. I don't think they can stop it because
okay, so they close this loophole. What happens? There's going to be two others that open up.
Yeah.
People, but besides this, even if you get rid of the diversion from the legal market, there are so much illicit cannabis being cultivated in California. It's still going to undercut these legal operators. And oh, by the way, if the legal operators competed in quality with the illicit market, people might not buy from the illicit market. But I have it on good authority that California cannabis and Washington state cannabis a lot of time is better on the black market than it is on the legal market because of the restrictive way that the licenses are set up. A lot of times people with money are cultivating rather than people who are skilled cultivators. Well, those skilled cultivators got to go apply their trade somewhere, right?
Yeah, and I think a big reason for that is at least here in Washington State. Now, California, you can smell your cannabis outside of in the jars and stuff in the dispensaries, but you can't now because of COVID. But
right.
In Washington State, you cannot smell your cannabis before you buy it. So I really believe a lot of junk cannabis is sold because you can't really open it up and take a smell of it before you buy it. And so, but on the underground market, you're standing there in front of somebody or they come to your house or you meet up with them or whatever it is, they're sitting right in front of you. You can smell it. If you don't like it, you'd be like, what the heck? So
yeah, I don't want that.
Yeah. So it's a little more, and it's really odd because right now the underground market and the legal market, the prices are about the same. But the big problem is the legal market, they have all the regulations. So they have to do security and they have to do all the taxes. They have to do all these things. The underground market, pound costs the same as the legal market, they don't have all the regulations. So it really seems to me as kind of a straight path forward on this, which is, as we talked about before, let's open up the THC market out there to everybody so that more people can grow, more people that can come into the legal market, bring in the underground market into the legal umbrella, and try to get this together. Now, of course, you're always going to have some people out there that don't want to be in the legal market.
Yeah. Well, and here's the other thing that people need to realize about Washington's market. I mean, do y'all test for pesticides?
Nope.
Do y'all test for fungus?
Nope.
Do y'all test for PGRs, illegal additives, anything like that?
That's a negative.
So people are asked to pay this tax, and for what? They don't get a safer product than the illicit market. They don't get a better product. And then the state has the audacity to shame people for going the great market. Provide a safer product. It doesn't even have to be better. Provide a safer product. Test for pesticides. Why don't you spend some of the money you're wasting on enforcement on making the legal product better so it can compete on this open market we like to worship at the altar of in America? How about that?
Yeah, and that's same thing going down in California. They're blaming these distributors for buying all the cannabis and then shipping it out of state. Well, if we had federal legalization and we'd actually get that fixed, they couldn't ship it out of state at a massive profit because it'd be just like all the laws will be the same when we get all this fixed. That's another thing. Open up legalization, underground market goes out of business, not overnight, but eventually it goes down more. And you know why the state's mad about this, Dig? It's not because they like hate cannabis or they're mad at stoners anymore. It's because they're not getting the tax money out of it. According to this report and in this lawsuit, do you know how much money California has collected thus far in cannabis taxes to date? $2.8 billion they've collected in taxes. But that is far less than they would collect if all these loopholes were closed up. So the state is kind of in panic mode with all this revenue going out the door. And it is hurting these small businesses like the dispensaries that's suing. So, and it's not just California. This is kind of going on all, at least over here on the West Coast.
Yeah.
This is a big problem.
I would argue that that is a concern for the state, but I would caution activists as who are still trying to legalize in their state to use the state revenue as an argument. A lot of times the states misappropriate that revenue and send it directly to law enforcement. A lot of times that revenue is frozen for long terms in slush funds that aren't used by the state. I think that the liberty argument is good. I think that the social equity argument is good. We've seen how Washington has abused its power to regulate and overtax the product to the deficit of the market, the legal market operators, and everyone in the culture. So I think that as far as cannabis legalization, the argument is, state, get off my back, and if you're going to do something, provide a valuable service. Test for pesticide. Test for fungus. Enforce those rules. I don't care about where the safe and legal cannabis goes once you've tested it and ensured it's safe. Make it safe first before you worry about anything else.
All right, and so speaking of safe and legal cannabis, we are going to get to a Uncle Dig's Garden Report. Let's hear what's going on in Uncle Dig's Garden.
Uncle Dig's Garden Update. Hi, it is the 18th of September, 2021, and we are in gardening zone 8B, and this is Uncle Dig with a garden update. First off, harvest news. I harvested the CBD Dutch treat that flowered early, and she is currently curing in jars and has been for about a week. I got a decent yield off her, and I'm curing her now. I was out of CBD weed, so I am being naughty and already dipping into the jar. She makes a sweet aromatic joint that produces a thick, voluminous smoke that is sure to entice your neighbor or piss them off. Whichever. It is loud. It provides a mild, short-lived, euphoric mind high that quickly dissipates into a soothing easing of the tightness of the body. It is excellent for my joint and back pain. It also quiets my seething mind. But that is short-lived with a high. It is excellent for the first joint of the day, whenever that is for you. I start my pot-smoking day with a half-gram or a full-gram joint of this, depending on my mood and pain level. She is advertised at 4% THC and like 8% CBD. I've grown this strain twice outdoors now. 2 finished plants and 2 more on the way. I have been happy with the plants that I have harvested. CBD Dutch Treat's a pretty cool plant. Now, my other 2 CBD Dutch Treats are in week 4 of flowering and are looking good. Both are tall plants. They are over my head. And I have to check them, the buds, using a ladder. They don't smell too much, but they are developing excellent bud structure. Now, on to the strawberry dream bag seed. This plant is doing extremely well. It is also just coming into week 4 of flower. It has some of the best looking buds of all the plants so far. This plant is starting to smell like a sweet, funky fruit. Just a little bit. I'm sure she'll get more bodacious as time moves on. The star killer was fed for the last time yesterday, and I had to harvest some buds last week that finished early. This plant will force me to harvest in smaller sections, as the bud seems to be all in variable stages of development, more on the healthier pheno than the sparser one. I was advised that the strain is challenging. I maybe should have listened. I hope the flavor is worth the extra work and stress. So far, it has been. Now, the Alien OG is probably the smallest buds of any plant that I'm growing this year, but they are a satisfying color. They are still adding bulk and taking on a nice purple hue. They smell like space fruit. I don't know what a space fruit smells like, but that is what this plant smells like, and it's lovely. I'm hoping that now that we're getting some rain where I'm at, that the air will clear out, we'll get a little more sun, and we'll be able to, some of those buds that are a little smaller, we'll be able to catch up. I really hope that's what happens. Now, the Black Domina smells amazing. She was fed for the last time yesterday morning. When I wake up in the morning to do my garden chores and I step out on my back porch, the funky, spicy aroma of this delectable plant engage in a romantic interlude with my nose. I can almost taste the semi-sweet smoke drifting on the breeze. Can you? I was worried the last few weeks that I didn't get a colorful pheno, but now the plants are darkening up nicely, and I hope to see some dark buds soon. I've got some bad news, though. The less colorful pheno had a horrible mite infestation. I had to harvest it yesterday afternoon because I've kept finding more and more infected sites, so I just cut all the infected buds off and hung the rest. It didn't quite start going amber yet, so it's going to be a little premature, but sometimes you have to do this stuff if you get a really bad infestation or something. My suspicion is that because I fell behind on spray, I skipped a spray while I was on vacation or whatever, that they were able to get a foothold. I've sprayed. I'll spray again soon. I don't see any other sign on any of my other plants. So hopefully it's a localized mite infection. Oh, I love the way this bud tastes, but this is the second time I've gotten mites on the Black Domina. So I don't think I'm going to grow her anymore. She seems extra susceptible to it. So I think I'm going to retire Black Domina after this run. So I may give the seeds away or something. I don't know yet. So that's kind of sucks, but I was able to save some of it. So I've probably got like a little bit hanging in my garage, but not near
as much as I would have. I probably lost half of that plant. It's very upsetting, but this kind of stuff just happens when you grow consumable plants, right? But good news. Onto my salsa garden. I'm harvesting more peppers than I can eat or send to my wife's work. I'm going to make some semi-sweet hot sauce with the rainbow chilies while I wait for the tomatillos to finish ripening for more garden salsa. I unfortunately may have to buy cilantro, as I have mostly harvested that already. Now, aphids have been making an inroad in my garden, and there may be thrips in my vegetable garden as well. I sprayed Dr. Zymes night before last and will spray again in 2 or 3 days when the rain stops. This time I'm going to spray the veggie garden as well. I skipped that last time and that was a mistake. Please stay safe. It is harvest time. We've got a lot of work to do and not much time. Don't get complacent. That's how injuries and law troubles happen. We are almost there, my outdoor gromies. In a couple more months, if we are a lot smart and a little lucky, we will be sitting on jars of good medicine to smoke with our friends. Let's overgrow the world.
All right. Thank you, Uncle Dig. Very fascinating garden update there. I was really fascinated about your Black Domina getting the bugs all the time. It's just kind of interesting to try to determine why that would be. It's obviously something in the terpenes or something about the plant that either attracts the bugs or doesn't repel them. So I don't really know which one it would be. Which one do you think it is?
Well, you know, there's a couple of different things I've thought about. I think that the mites are kind of always there, and when they come infestation or whatever, like in my garden, I grow a very diverse garden. So I assume that I have mites in it. You know, I have, you know, a front rose garden. My backyard has a lot of other food crops in it. So I'm battling pests or like doing IPM, integrated pest management, all the time. But some plants I've noticed over the years are more vulnerable to some pests. For example, one of those Black Dominas was inundated with mites, and the other one was not. It's fine.
Huh.
I couldn't find any mites on it. I harvested a couple days later than the other one, it's got like a different quality smoke to it, but they're both good. So I advise people, you know, certain scent profiles seem to attract certain pests. I don't know why. But I will say that, if you catch them early, you can do some stuff with them. But I caught mine kind of late, and I didn't treat fast enough, so I had to harvest a little bit early.
All right, so we're going to get on to our last segment of the show, and that's our It's a Bus segment. And this week, we're not necessarily going to talk about a specific bust. What we're going to talk about is a new report that just came out by the FBI. It's the Uniform Crime Report they put out every year. And it just said that cannabis busts were down 36% from 2019 to 2020. Now hold your applause, because it's down 36%, but over 350,000 Americans still were arrested for cannabis in the United States in 2020, Dig.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting for the audience to know this total is the total percentage of marijuana arrests by region. This is mainly in states where cannabis is illegal. So most of this is where cannabis is illegal. And of those arrests, 91% or 317,793 were arrested for simple marijuana possession offenses only, not distribution. None of that, just possession. So the myth that law enforcement doesn't enforce possession, that some people will say, is a myth. That is primarily what they're doing, is harassing people for simple possession.
Yeah, and it does say that the majority of all the arrests are still happening in cannabis states where it's illegal. But let's look at that for a second. 38 states have medical cannabis. So there's still, you know, there's still a lot of arrests going on in places where cannabis is sort of legal. And there's a lot of people using medical cannabis that just can't get to the doctor. They don't have the wherewithal. you know, they don't want to go make it official that they are using cannabis. They can't because of their work. So there's a lot, or just all kind of reasons. There's a lot of people out there using medical cannabis that don't get the green card. And I think a lot of those people are in that 91% of the people who are getting arrested are just people out there, medical cannabis patients, and they don't have a card. So this is still a epidemic. I mean, we want to talk about the COVID-19. I mean, that's 350,000 people whose lives has basically been ruined, at least for a year or two. And then on top of that, what was the peak? And this is down 50% in from 2008, which they had like 850,000 arrests in 2008 for cannabis possession.
There were 545,000 marijuana-related arrests in 2019. People, this isn't acceptable. We've been trained to accept police officers violently assaulting and kidnapping people for possession of a plant. This is state terrorism. Police that arrest people over small amounts of cannabis are terrorists. We don't need to be concerned with what they think about drugs or what they think is the right answer, because they're violent thugs who assault people and lock them up for nonviolent offenses. That's terrorism.
Yeah, and they detain people, they put you in jail, and then after that, it's a good year. Your life is just ruined. You got to go to court, all the court costs, everything else, and then you got your misdemeanor. And a lot of times, police do this stuff just to fund their police department. So all those court costs and everything, that's funding the court, paying police salaries. And so, like you said, this is a really big problem in the United States, and I'm with you. I think we've been conditioned just to be like, okay, whatever, another pot bust. But we really need to kind of step up a little more and get a little louder. I really feel that organizations, like, I know Normal's out there doing a lot of work on this, but it just seems like some of the other organizations, we could get a little louder on this, a little more from the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, at least the Libertarian wing. Let's get a little louder on this to kind of get that number down to zero rather than over 350,000 people arrested, 317,000 of those people just walking around with a bag in their pocket, Dig.
Let's arrest a few people for cannabis. Let's go after the people who profited off of prohibition and private prisons. Let's lock them up.
All right. So we are going to get out of here on the Cannabis Corner. I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in. If you'd like to get in touch with me, you can send in an email to info@RadioTacoma. Put Cannabis Corner into the subject box, and they will get me the email. If you have any questions on cannabis, you can email me there. And how can people get in touch with you, Dig, and listen to your podcast?
Yeah, you can listen to my podcast, The Backseat Chronicles, anywhere you find podcasts. You can also follow me on Instagram @UncleDig for any cannabis-related content.
This is Cannabis Corner, hosted by Lucas Barfield. If you would like to get in contact with your host, he is on Twitter @MJIsMedicine. Your musical selection is The Happy Monster by Chubby Jackson and his orchestra, recorded on 78 in 1947. You can find this music and much more at The Great 78 Project, an archive of historical music recordings at great78.archive.org. You are listening to 101.9 KTAH, Radio Tacoma.